The following is a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. Hollywood, redefined. From Los Angeles, California, streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is Black Hollywood Live, the Black Tea Party, featuring weekly discussions on political news and current affairs. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood, redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host of Black Hollywood Live, the Black Tea Party.
This is a great theme song. I just want to say that. I never get sick of it.
There's no better theme song.
No better theme song.
I'm with you.
No better theme song.
You can't go wrong with Marvin Gaye.
It gets you jam. Hey, you know, I don't want to wear these headsets, so I had to put them up on my ear. Hey, you guys, welcome to the Black Tea Party. We love having you here, Black Hollywood Live, Black Tea Party today. We've got a lot of topics going on. You guys know what today is. We might as well just start off with that first.
Yeah.
We want to basically acknowledge that today is 9/11. Today is 2015, but we know back in 2001 was the origination of 9/11. 9/11 was devastating because when America was attacked, by foreign land had attacked America. There's always speculation of if that was real or not real. We know we were real because we lost several American people, thousands of people.
Over 3,000
people died that day. Some say even more that was unreported. We want to say that our hearts and our spirits and our love goes and prayers go out to their families who still have loved ones that they're remembering on this day. And I think what it does, it makes us stronger as American people. We identify that no matter what happens in this country, we are resilient. And I want to encourage you as American citizens to be grateful because people died so that you have the right to live. And that freedom is not free. Hey, you guys, my name is Shirley Husser. I want to bring our panelists in. So passionate. I know you guys are here.
Yes, you do.
And you're excited to be
here?
I thought
you forgot about us. I thought you just went on to a trip.
I'm Shirley Husser. You can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and all those other social platforms. You're going to love them. And then we have Don here.
Don Nash. Yes, I'm so happy to be here. I'm with you. I share that sentiment. You kind of pulled my heartstrings about 9/11. But you can follow me. We'll talk a little bit more about some things that are going on. And follow me on Twitter and on Instagram and on Facebook. I'm there. Don Nash.
What's up, guys? Michael Teamont, M-I-H-K-E-L-T-E-E-M-A-N-T. Follow me on Twitter, at Michael Teamont, and at Michael J. Teamont on Instagram.
The comedian of the
hour.
I think everybody's a comedian today. We're going to have a good show. Let's cut to the chase. 9/11, do you guys remember where you were?
Yeah.
I do.
Let's start with Don.
It was early in the morning, and I was at home. I'd gotten up and kind of getting the kids ready, and I'm a news junkie, so I immediately turned my television onto the news channel that I watch, and there it was. And it was, I think I passed by the first time, and I saw the one building, the first building that was ablaze, and thinking, oh, wow, a plane, wow, maybe a small plane, not thinking it was a big plane. Came back, another plane, and then I stopped, and it sat me down. So I was at home, getting ready for work, and I don't think life's been the same ever since.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Were you on the West Coast or in New York?
I was on the West Coast.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was waking up. It was like my third week of college, and I was living somewhere else. And we got a phone call because it was earlier than I had to usually get up. And they're like, wait, what? So they turn on the TV, and that was the first building being hit. So I'm kind of waking up. We were all, roommate situation. So, like, I kind of wake up, and I'm, like, looking at the TV. And then, like, a couple minutes later, plane number two. And that was a weird third week of school. Like, we were shocked. Like, we've never seen anything like that. So we're sitting there. We'd go to college. Almost all our classes were canceled. But nobody left school. We just kind of, like, sat glued to the news all day.
Yeah, it was like a movie come true, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have vivid images of the clouds coming down the street and people running.
Yeah.
You know, almost chasing them from the collapse, you know. I spend quite a bit of time in New York now, and it's very eerie to go to the site where those two buildings once stood. And even though we have the new Victory Tower that's there, which, hey, for the Victory Tower, it's still very, it's something thick in the air.
Mm.
Something thick in the air.
You know, it's interesting because us on the West Coast, it's a different energy than it is on the East Coast, because I've been to that site as well after 9/11, and it is interesting of a spirit pull to the body and to the mind that it's unprofound. It's unlike anything you've ever felt unless you're there, because especially if you're very patriotic and if you're very political, you really appreciate our country, but you really feel the pain, because you think people were falling out of the sky.
Yeah.
People were falling out. They were jumping.
They
like were 70 jumping. Stories.
70 stories.
Because they were like, especially after the first tower fell, they like people in the other buildings started jumping out because they're like, there's no way down. There's no stairs. There's no elevator. I might as well take my chance because this is going to fall.
This is going to fall. I'm next in line.
That's crazy.
Like, because, can you imagine being in the other building, seeing the building getting hit?
I know. Yeah, yeah. That's.
And you're going, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And you're at the top and you go, there's no way I can get down that fast. Yeah. I know I can't get down the elevator shaft that fast.
Yeah.
You know, I was with my children at home and I was on the phone with one of my attorneys, which is kind of interesting. And he said 9/11. He said, we didn't call it then. Of course, not that.
Yeah. World Trade Center.
He said the World Trade Center just got hit by a plane. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So you turn on and you're so at disbelief, but the first hit. But when the second plane hit, you were like, no.
Violated.
But then you still have to keep moving. It's like one of those movies where you see the person and they can't move them.
Yeah.
And the bad guys come. It's like, come on. And the person that stopped.
Yeah.
And the reason I said I had to be moved because my kids were going to be late for school.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to tell my children. I had never lived in anything so traumatic.
Yeah.
And I was just devastated. I was like, oh, my God, what is this?
Yeah, our kids were late because we could not move.
I could not move.
Yeah, we sat down.
Not because of traffic, because subconsciously it looked like a movie.
Yeah.
And physically you were torn because you had to explain this to your child who was getting dumped at school. And the other kids, you knew that the teachers had to disarm that. I had to ask some of the teachers. Teachers were really parents that day.
Yeah.
There was a halt on American culture. And, you know, let's talk about what has happened since then. I mean, how we travel, how we do interaction with security. You're always flying everywhere. Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, it's changed. It's changed in a major way to get through airport security. First of all, you got to get to the airport 2 hours ahead of time. You know,
when
you get there 2 hours ahead of time, you still may miss your flight because you've got such a routine to go through as it relates to security. I mean, now they've got some other little perks. In other words, you could be pre-screened and things of that nature, which expedites it. But you're in there and you're taking off your belt, you're taking off your shoes, you're taking off your jacket, your sweaters, you're pulling out your laptop and putting it in a bucket. You're taking, you know, you can't have that bottle of lotion that you're just taking with you or that bottle of hair gel. I can't tell you how many bottles of hair gel have been taken away from me at security.
How many times did it take you to learn, Dom?
How expensive that gel is. You're like, what?
You just go to the third time, you're like, oh,
never leave home without it. You know what I mean?
I take that stuff back to the car. I got there early in the times. I said, I'm calling somebody.
It's bad. So it is. Yeah, I mean, and I even went through, and I'll be very honest, because, I mean, we're on a political show, and I remember being in the airport and looking at a guy come through with a head wrap, you know, which made him easily identifiable in terms of his faith. And I'll never forget, he walked right through security. And who did they stop and start...
You.
They stripped me butt naked, and I'm sitting here saying, well, look at...
Okay, but here's where we can start debating.
I know.
Because that's actually the safest way to screen people. And they, every expert said it, but we've talked about this before. So when you... Okay, so this is one of the things that people have always been like, why are they randomly screening? How come they're getting the grandma instead of the guy with the turban? First of all, was he Sikh or Muslim?
I'm not even going to label it.
See, that's what I'm saying.
He was suspect to me.
Well, but what you do when you say we're going to screen this group of people, you actually open it up for terrorists to start recruiting from outside that group of people. So by actually randomly screening, you increase security because now they can't go, okay, he's black, so he might be. We don't know because, you know what I mean?
Right.
So ISIS can't actively go after, like, oh, so they're not screening any white guys between the ages of 20 and 30. How many anti-government people do we know, 20 and 30?
I get that.
You see what I mean?
I get that. I'm not saying that you should screen all the white guys and not screen the black guy because we typically are not terrorists. But back then, because my view is different now.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough.
Very okay.
I just
okay.
wanted to bring that
back
up.
Then, when it first came out, and I'll say maybe around 2005, mm-hmm. I looked at every Middle Eastern person or every Muslim person with a little bit of a. All right, now did they check them? Check his shoes.
You know,
check his
draws. I will have to add to that. I have to add to that. I worked in Glendale at an office where we had a large Armenian community. Mm. And they would come to me, and honestly, I'm going to be honest, they felt like, I said, well, welcome to my club. You're the new Negro. How we've been treated as African-American people, and how we are still treated as African-American people, they had never been looked at in that light. They never felt that shift of the energy when you enter the room because of who and what and how you are. And now, all of a sudden, the target was them.
The target was them. I get that. And I was a perpetrator of that. I admit, I'm not ashamed of it because it was a growth process for me to now see a Middle Eastern person or a person of a Muslim faith and not have that type of bias. But I did. And it was 9/11 that gave me that bias. So that was just kind of the residue, if you will, of the residual effect.
I think it's important to talk about that kind of stuff, too. Like, I was on a podcast earlier, my friend's podcast, where he was talking about, and this is slightly off topic, but bear with me real quick. It was about being an LGBT ally and how I voted against gay marriage in 2001 when I was still religious. And then shortly after that, even though I was still religious, I kind of regret that. Mm. But it's important, like, I say, okay, I was wrong about that, and I openly talk about it. I don't try and hide it. And I think that's good that we talk about openly. Like you, it takes a lot for someone to go, you know what, I was wrong about that, and this is how I used to think.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to bring up, like, these are important parts of the conversation that seem to be getting stifled a lot because people are going, oh, he's a racist. Like, someone might take that out of context. Right. I'm just saying that someone could take that out of, oh, so Don's racist again. No, he used to kind of look at, but I think those conversations are important.
It's a
to
tendency,
have.
And 9/11 happened for me that impacted me that way.
Yeah.
But something else happened for someone else.
I don't think how you were impacted was abnormal. I think that a majority of Americans felt the exact same way that you did.
But I think the result is something that has been woven throughout the fabric of American
absolutely.
Culture that has contributed to a racial tension.
Absolutely.
And we're experiencing that a lot now, and I think that. For me, my story is 9/11, okay? And maybe I get a pass because that's my story.
Right.
And everybody was impacted by 9/11. But for somebody else, it was the black guy that raped his mom. Whatever the story is, it alters my perspective and my worldview. And now I see you a certain way. I see people like you a certain way.
But when you have that many Americans taken out, now it's an American issue. It's not a racial issue.
But when I'm trying to filter that through my personal belief system, I don't get through all that.
No,
right?
You don't.
I really don't. I don't get through all that. So...
No, so when we think about 9/11, it's not only the airports that were affected by that. Security as far as business as well. Security has been going in and out of places.
Yeah.
I lived up in Palmdale, Lancaster at the time, and Edward Air Force Base wasn't as hard to get into. But after that, that became very hard to get into. Another thing that took place in California, driver's license. You know, them being able to identify you through driver's license, through a lot of things have changed as far as the system of security in California. And probably nationwide as well.
I was going to say, from Vegas, Nellis was the same thing, where you could kind of go on base and stuff. It really wasn't a huge deal. I didn't go that often, but it wasn't like a whole security. And then after 9/11, it was, who do you know? Why are you here?
Right.
All over the place.
And even, and I say driver's license because when you fly, I remember I kind of had an expired driver's license. Don't tell nobody. It's not expired now.
Revolt.
But it was an ID, and it was current. To a certain extent. But anyway, it was an expired driver's license. And they were going to let me on the plane. And I said, why can't I get on this plane? They said, because your license is not current. So they require by law that you had to have a current driver's license.
But your license can be expired for up to a year before they give you grief about that. Did you know that, Sherry?
Well,
how old was your
license? I was black with an expired license.
Oh, is that that's the angle?
Why you gotta bring that?
But see, here we are, and now it's because you're black. No, it's because you weren't a steward to renew your license. Power to the driver's license. Get renewed. You can mail that in. You don't gotta show up.
But it's just, look, I'm not disagreeing. Law is law, and you know, I'm very political.
There's
and
a stereotype in that story.
I respect the law for what it is, and I do have a current license. Thank you, Jesus. But I do want to state this. With 9/11, they were shifts. They weren't as passive and so biased as, I mean, you know, kind of like, okay, nonchalant is the better word. They weren't as nonchalant as they are now. They're very strict, especially when you go on military bases. When you travel, your papers need
some
to be in order, even on some college campuses as well.
Science departments especially, from what I understand.
Right, right.
They're super strict because they hold chemicals.
So it's really interesting because you have a generation. My youngest son was, I think he was 5 or 6, and now he's 19, and he's had friends who he went to school with who were babies and toddlers who served in the military and who have died.
Yeah.
And those kids didn't know that when that hit, I think about those children in that classroom, in that earlier years of elementary classroom, didn't know that they will be fighting for our country and dying due to that event.
That happened so long ago, they don't even really remember.
They don't remember.
Wow. That's amazing. I have a son who's 23, and he was 10 at the time, and he just decided to get on a plane for the first time since watching the plane crash. We would want to plan family vacations, and he wouldn't want to get on a plane. It was just the way that information went in.
Right.
And it gave him a fear.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. No, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, that totally makes sense.
Sorry for cutting you off, but being on a plane, I was on a plane today, and the turbulence was so crazy. The fear in people, you know, it's always 9/11 is always back there, and today is 9/11. So I even got mad at the pilot.
Yeah, because you were flying.
Yeah, I'm flying, this plane is shaking, and I'm saying, are we under attack or what? Can somebody get on the mic and say something?
Jesus,
let me
please!
Know.
We'll get hallelujah!
Because of the day, you might want to just let us know.
Calm it down.
I'm telling you, I was upset. I was upset that the pilot did not have what I call a pilot side courtesy or whatever.
Something.
Say something.
See, but I think he thought, oh, this is just terrible. I don't think he was today was like the cheapest day to fly ever. Probably the safest day to fly ever too. Like, I was dropping people off. I work Uber, so like I was dropping people off at 4 a.m. Usually there's a little bit of I pulled in every time so easy. Nobody's flying today.
And the thing that throws me is that
you could get $30 flights today.
I didn't.
It was like San Francisco and Vegas for like $25-$30. I think it was Southwest. That's how bad they were trying to fill seats to make sure that people.
And there was a time when I wouldn't fly a plane that had American or United or anything that looked patriotic.
What about Delta?
There was a time because I thought, I would fly Delta. I wouldn't fly anything. I wouldn't fly American, U.S. Air,
oh
U.S.
My
Airways,
God,
anything
you're so
that looked
silly.
Patriotic. I thought they'd target those planes.
Well, they're the most safest ones now. You know, we need to move on to the next topic, but I want to at least say this, and you guys give me your like 30-second buzz on this one. Freedom is not free. And we live in a country where millions of people have died. Thousands of people are dying weekly, monthly, yearly, serving in the military, just local police officers. We know that they're the negative ones, but there are also a lot of good officers that we don't give recognition to. And we need to acknowledge those officers, and we need to acknowledge the people who are sacrificing their life and be grateful that we have a wonderful country that allows us what we do. And they adjusted. I love the fact that they did not immobilize us to the point that we didn't stop. We kept moving forward. And that's what makes America great, is that we did not stop. We kept moving forward. We got together. We cleaned that space. And we took our children to school. And we prayed. And we cried. And we mourned. But we had victory. And that's why that tower stands for that.
Yeah. It's interesting. And I have a personal conflict with it because I'm not the guy that would run to the fire. I'm the brother running from it. Right, and so
fair enough. You know what's going on?
I'm just telling you. You know, somebody give me updates later.
Okay, I'll be catching it in the end.
When I look at these guys and women, guys and girls, if you will, that have run to the fire, you know, the first responders of that, that sacrificed their lives.
You're not one of those guys.
I don't have the cojones for that. You know, I wish I did have.
And those people aren't even serving in the military, but they were just everyday citizens.
And my hat's off to them. I mean, I look at and I
that's
you know,
patriotic.
That to me, that's patriotic. So when you say it isn't free, it is because someone decided to lay down their life, not think about themselves, and think about the greater good. Even if they wouldn't be victorious, it was just victorious for me. to know that there are people out there that will lay down for you.
Amen.
People that will take down a plane.
Amen.
Because they recognize what this plane is intended to do. So hats off.
That's one of the coolest things terrible event. I mean, we can all agree. Yeah. But, like, some of those stories, like, one of my favorite ones was, you know, Steve Buscemi, the actor. He used to be a firefighter. So, and when the towers hit, he went back to his original station, and he volunteered looking for people and stuff for, like, weeks after. Wow. And, like, that's what's kind right. of, I mean, if and, you're going to have a silver lining, it's a, yeah. not the, you know, you don't want this event to ever happen. But it kind of showed how we do help each other out as a country in times of turmoil, you know?
Yeah. That's something for the human spirit. It truly does.
You saw it in Pearl Harbor, too, that. I think.
Yeah. Moving forward, gentlemen, let's talk about being tackled. Y'all like being tackled?
No.
Not the way these folk define and tackle.
Recently, his name is James Blake. My phone is dead. So James Blake, amazing tennis player. He's been part of the pro tennis circuit for quite some time. And he was headed off to, U.S. Open? Which open was it?
US Open.
He was on his way to U.S. Open, just standing there. Now, they just released the video today. Please make sure you guys see this video. He's typical, brother on a cell phone, leaning up against the hotel, and bam, here comes the NYPD blue boy. They tackled him. He looks suspicious. They're claiming that he was apparently another person they thought that he was, and they apologized. But it happened so quickly, Mike had to show me the video three times because I missed it. Mike, tell me about that.
So the police are saying that he looks a bit like the guy they were trying to get. There's some guy they're trying to get for credit fraud. It still doesn't make sense. Like, every excuse they're giving, I'm like, why would you just tackle someone from credit fraud without identifying yourself as a police officer, without doing all the steps? And I can't help but think it's because he's black. Like, they didn't even look like, they didn't approach him. They didn't show a badge. If you watch the video, it's 15 seconds between, and eight of it is him just on his cell phone. All of a sudden, this guy comes into the picture.
Bam! He
just grabs him, throws him to the ground. He didn't even know what was coming. Like, and so, like, what is going on with the police again?
You know,
again.
It's like a woman on hormones. I'm going to get me one. I'm going to get me one, George.
There's room to consider that there's a fear, you know, in the police officers that maybe this
credit fraud.
I get you. I'm saying, even if it was the right guy.
Scarface with credit fraud. I want to see that movie.
Even if the guy that was standing against the building was the guy they were looking for, why was that the approach?
Exactly. That's my question.
That's the question, right?
Yeah.
Right. And I think they're really scared because here was an accomplished person. Not like black people aren't accomplished, but oh no, we got a real good one now. Here's one that, well, they say he's half black. What does that have to do with anything? What does that have to do with the subject matter?
I've been telling him I can't grab my tennis racket no more. Something's wrong.
Get a nice check.
What I'll say about that, though, it proves that they're looking at the color. It doesn't matter that he's half black because he's half white, and they obviously don't see that. They're judging him based off the color of his skin. That's the only like they saw a black guy who looks. Like Don said, why are you just tackling people? You should still go through protocol.
Right.
Like, there is a protocol. Right. Even if you're doing undercover work, you don't just run up on people, throw them to the ground.
But, Michael, help me with this, though, because I just want to be balanced for not only for myself, but also for some of our viewers. You say that it is because of the color of his skin. Yeah. And I know that we say that a lot, and sometimes we say it so much that it almost appears like it's just an automatic response to things.
Yeah.
Is it really true? Do you really believe that?
I mean, you're white. We want to hear your perspective.
This police officer has three other incidents of something similar to this. They were all against people of color.
Oh, wow.
So that was in one of the articles I read. So first of all, there is a little trace of this going on. Two of them were teenage boys, and they ended up not having anything on them, but he swore they had pot or something like that. It was like some ridiculous, and he threw them to the ground. One of them got hurt. So he has a track record. Why is he still on the street? This is what keeps happening. Like you said earlier, I'd say 95% of cops, at least, it's probably like 97, 98, are great guys who want to help their community.
Absolutely.
And then we got these 2 to 3%, and slightly an argument against unions in a way, they're staying on the street, and the unions are helping them stay on the street. We need stricter guidelines.
Absolutely.
If he has three prior incidences, this was preventable. Why is he on the street? He should be behind a desk, if that.
Well, you know, I challenge why we still call him a cop. this is my thought. Because if a teacher does something that is inappropriate to a kid, they're stripped of that, and they're no longer a teacher, they're a pedophile.
Yeah.
No, I understand that. I understand that. But we also...
Let's put the right label on it.
That's the right label on it, right.
Because I think that what we do, we run the risk of lambasting cops, and then we do see this little trickle of people going in there tackling, right? But then...
But listen to what Mike said. But Mike said the man had a pattern. Listen to what he said. Yeah. He had a pattern. If you see a pattern of injustice, then you need to identify that that pattern is going to rectify some other type of outcome. That pattern saying, okay, this is going to happen. It's going to happen. It's like a beat of a drum. All the drum beats coming again. He just happened to hit the wrong drum.
Yeah, well.
You know.
So, no, and hopefully James Blake is looking at legal action, which will hit the NYPD, and he said that.
Absolutely.
He said that he's going to take that money and try and donate it to inner-city causes.
Well, we're 4 weeks away from Justice or Else. Minister Louis Farrakhan is going to have a march. Mm. He's going to have a march. And that march is going to take place in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Okay? And he has stirred up some emotions with this video. And in this video, Minister Farrakhan says death is sweeter. And I think that a lot of people have taken this video. They have made it to seem mean. Some people say, oh, he's vicious. I mean, I've had my emotional feelings behind this video. But I think we need to discuss it and kind of dissect it. You guys have had a chance to watch it. Don, what do you think about this?
I think it's horrible. You know, I'm a stand for peace, so I'd rather not talk about what I'm against. But I think that Louis Farrakhan perpetuates a, you know, a radical approach to dealing with the issues that we currently face. I think he called for 10,000 in a million. He says that death is sweeter. He talks about going, getting guns and going after, you know, the people that are, he believes are the, that are perpetuating the crime against people of color. And so I can't go with him in that conversation.
Okay.
I think he's a million man manipulator.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I have a bit of a difference.
Okay, but see, now there's others who will say he's acting on the fuel that's already out there.
Yes.
He didn't create this fire.
No, but this has been his fire. He's had the gasoline for this fire for a very
long
time.
Yeah, but the gasoline is now getting ready to be more ignited.
Yeah,
look
but
at
he
what
didn't
happened.
Get credit for that. His motive has been very clear.
I disagree with you.
Go ahead, Mike.
First of all, I think Farrakhan is taken out of context all the time, and he's represented as a villain when he's really not. He's saying, I've said it on the show, I don't even how many times did I say it during Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown? There's only so, what he's trying to say is a warning. He's saying, listen, we need to get this under... There's a point where everyone breaks.
Yes.
Where they don't care anymore.
Yes.
There's a like he said in the video, there's a point where a Palestinian looks and goes, I want you to hurt like I hurt because I have nothing left to live for. Things like that. That's how ISIS started. Started as a peaceful organization. Then they kept getting oppressed and killed and killed and killed and killed and killed and killed. Eventually, you're going to kill back. Eventually, you look at your things and be like, well, let's look at this other part of the Quran. Where, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, that's what that brings. Boko Haram, same thing. They started as a peaceful group. And Farrakhan,
what are you advocating for?
He's not advocating. He's saying,
but you, what are you advocating for?
I'm advocating everyone needs to get together and be peaceful. But
okay.
It doesn't mean we don't talk about...
But we can't do that with Farrakhan's initiative.
Farrakhan's in the Malcolm X side of things.
Okay,
we need
a
Malcolm.
Huh? We couldn't do it with Malcolm either.
No, but Malcolm was the opposite of Martin Luther King. Like,
absolutely.
They worked together
right,
a lot.
Right.
People forget that. They wrote letters, they were working on that.
Even,
you need someone to shine a light.
Even if you pull in place Malcolm and Martin, and what we know about that history,
mm-hmm.
and how both men had a different agendas.
Yeah.
We look at the agenda of what they wanted us to do, and what is the outcome of that agenda. We're living in the outcome of that agenda. Because peace obviously has not gotten black people anywhere. Okay, violence has obviously not gotten us anywhere.
But I think
so
the
what is going to get
swinging.
Us? But it's swinging how?
I think it's swinging to extreme left or extreme right. I think that there has been progress amongst black people. I think that we've seen growth, we've seen development. We've seen some attack here recently that's really uncomfortable, very violating. We do need to stand for that. We do need to fight for laws to change. We definitely need to be more active, but not that nothing's been done or that very little's been done. We had a black man in the White House.
But look at in Baltimore and Ferguson. That's what we're talking. We're not talking. There obviously there's ton of black people in the community who are Obama. We got a lot.
I can't see what you're saying.
So DraftKings.
Oh, 2 minutes. Thank
two
you.
Minutes
that later. Works great.
So,
thank you.
What was it talking about?
We're talking about you.
This is what happened. Those people aren't what we're talking about. They're in the elite. They're in the 1%. They're, or at least with the 1%.
Right.
We're talking about, like, the poor neighborhoods in Chicago, L.A., New York, where they're being oppressed and oppressed and oppressed, and eventually they're going to fight back. And it's healthy to warn. Like, you can't sit there with peace when this is going to happen. We got to explain it. He's just letting us know. He's going, listen, it's going to happen.
Right.
No, he's not saying, listen, it's going to happen. He's saying, listen, go and make it happen.
No. If you look at his original, he's saying what's going to end up happening. And he was using, and this is where I'll be unpopular, he was using Bible and Quran quotes to back it.
Of course he was.
Manipulation.
But but that's his point. He's going, if you look at that, that's where people are going
to
go.
I want to talk about.
That's what happened to ISIS and Boko Haram.
We have to go through an introduction. We want to talk about King Draft.
DraftKings.
Yeah, DraftKings, excuse me. And why don't you talk about that? And I want to go back to FairCon because I have a question for both of you. You'll find interesting. Go ahead.
Well, DraftKings.com, guys. / what? Beat Black Hollywood Live, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Pick it up. Sorry. Put it on the screen, please. Okay, so DraftKings.com. If you like fantasy football, I have 5 teams. I go a little ridiculous. But as the season goes, usually 3 or 4 end up sucking. And that's how But DraftKings, every week, you can play a new game. You draft just like you do every week. So you have a new chance and you can win money. Like be giving away $1 million. It's a lot of fun. MIHKELT if you want to play against me on DraftKings.
Well, you know what I love about DraftKings?
I'll be there Sunday.
I'm along right now.
What I love about DraftKings is you know where your man's at, A. Yeah. And B, you get... Well, seriously, and all your friends are there. It's almost like a Twitch.com. It's like being with Twitch TV, but you're all together.
What's great is one week you can suck, the next week... You can brand new, you can film it.
I love playing games on videos on phone, but this is a different level. This is an opportunity to make money, and why not do it with DraftKings? So I think it's great.
If you love fantasy, I'll vouch for it. I love fantasy. It's so fun.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. So you guys, when you have a chance, make sure you check it out. Go to the website. What's the website, Don?
I'm trying to search right now. It's DraftKings.com.
Guys, go to DraftKings.com and use the code BLACK. BLACK.
There you go. Oh, there's a code.
That'll get you a free game.
Go to DraftKings.com and the code is BLACK. Tea Party?
Black.
Well, black. Black.
The code is black.
Just look at me.
I'm doing it right now.
The code is black. Let's go back to FairCon. Okay, so I have an issue with this. I hear what you say.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to wrap this up. So I hear what you say. The bottom line is when it comes to Louis FairCon, he is only acting on what is there.
Hogwash.
He's acting on the fuel of the community. He's acting on the anger on the streets. Mm-hmm. And if you keep taunting and beating and stripping and raping and killing a certain culture of any culture, the revolution of the community will rise.
And somebody can ignite that.
Anyone can ignite it.
Thank you.
Anyone can ignite it.
And now it's Lewis.
And it's Lewis, and it's also Christian ministers who are going in churches. He's going into liberal Christian churches, and he's speaking. And I hear a lot of white people come to me and say, surely this isn't right. Why is he doing this? Because you cannot continue to beat to steal. What happened to James Blake was unjust, and that just added to the fuel of FairCon.
Yeah.
So we're going to wrap this up, you guys.
I guess so.
Hey, thank you guys so much for watching Black Tea Party, Black Hollywood Live. Please make sure to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and follow all of us. My name is Shirley Husar, H-U-S-A-R, and Don.
Hey, Don Nash at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Don's Daily Dose. I'm DraftKinging right now.
Mike?
At Michael Timon, MIHKELTEEMANT on Instagram, at Michael J. Timon, or MichaelTimon.com for upcoming shows.
We appreciate you. Thank you for watching and keep sharing our videos and telling all your friends to watch.
Code Black, right?
Code Black.
Code Black. Yes.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagrammy, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood, redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.